Placing aside the sharpened piece of reed he was using to drain a pus-filled wound, Sullivan slowly turned his head. Her eyes were lovely, and as cold and hard as his own.
"May I beg pardon? My name is Daniel Lissman,
and—" "I know who you are and why you are here. They call me Terry, and I work in the Gaudy House. Last night I heard a couple of the troopers talking. They're going to claim the Baron's wife, Tabitha, is feeling poorly, fell off a horse or something, and when you go into that room, you ain't coming out."
Sullivan stuffed his hands into his pockets and thumbed back the hammers on the two snub-nosed revolvers.
"Indeed. And why do you call me, what was the name, Sylvester?"
"Cut the shit. Also fucked Overton's men when they were here, and aside from Ryan, you were the only thing they feared. Big guy, no hair, likes to do the dead."
"Really now?"
She sidled closer, the thick smell of stale perfume and sweat radiating from her body.
"I saw you last night at the graveyard, so don't tell me different."
Calmly, Sullivan debated the possibilities. This could be a trap by the Baron to trick him into revealing himself, or it could be the truth, a whore looking to connect to somebody more powerful for a better life. Slowly standing to his full height, the mutie looked down at the big woman and spread his arms in a friendly manner.
"This is an interesting tale."
Sullivan rested a hand on her shoulder. She trembled at the contact as he increased the pressure until she thought the bones would break.
"We should discuss it in private."
He lifted the woman a few inches off the floor and carried her away. Terry tried to speak, but the pain was too great. Moving quickly, Sullivan headed for the door to the basement. Once out of sight, he could question this Terry thoroughly and learn the truth.
"Wait, healer!"
Only a yard from the door, Sullivan stopped and turned, hugging Terry close to him as if they were close friends. Maneuvering through the maze of cots, a brown shirt was rushing toward them. He was armed, but the blaster was holstered. Sullivan relaxed a little and smiled, his mind racing with new possibilities. Unexpectedly, Terry slid her arm about his waist and shook her torso to make her ample breasts jiggle. She was playing his lover. How very interesting.
"How can I help you, Lieutenant?"
The man gulped some air.
"Lady Carter has fallen off her horse in the stables. She can't breathe. Come quickly!"
"Oh, no."
Sullivan released his prisoner. Terry stayed next to him, breathing hard. He could feel the heat of her breasts through his clothing, and was repulsed.
"Elevate her legs at once and loosen her clothing. I'll get some instruments and be right there."
The sec man paused for a moment, unsure of what to do.
"Go! Every second you waste could mean her life, fool!"
With a grim expression, the sec man nodded and dashed away.
"See?"
Terry was rubbing her bruised ribs.
"You were correct. What is the price of this assistance?"
Terry leaned forward, her face shiny with avarice.
"Take me with you. I'm nothing here but a slut. Somewhere else, with your help, I could marry well, become a lady, maybe the wife of a baron."
It was a fair price. He thought about the offer.
Too much.
Sullivan slapped her across the face, the bones audibly cracking. Her skull partially crushed, Terry slumped to the floor, burbling blood through the ruin of her mouth. Not caring if anybody else was watching, Sullivan then kicked the woman, caving in her chest. She tumbled across the floor, arms and legs flailing like a rag doll's. Moving to a cabinet, he ripped open a duffel bag, the old canvas patched many times with different colored cloth until it was almost a camo pattern. Reaching inside, he started withdrawing glass bottles filled with an oily liquid, greasy rags tied about the necks. Lighting the rags, he threw the Molotov cocktails across the room in every direction. Flames engulfed the cots, and the patients started to scream, beating at the sticky fire covering their bodies with bandaged hands. Sec men rushed in and gasped in horror. Sullivan used the diversion to ruthlessly mow them down and steal a long blaster. Stuffing the last two bottles into his jacket pockets, the mutie stepped outside and hosed the street, shooting anybody in sight. The screaming from inside the castle continued as he darted across the courtyard, spraying controlled bursts from the Kalashnikov at the rooftops and windows. No horses or wags were in sight, so he ran for the barbican, hoping to cross the drawbridge and reach the safety of the woods. Once he was among the trees, it would take an army of guards to find him again. A brick-lined tunnel went through the barbican of the outer wall, and several men stood in a cluster near a smoking oil drum, the ragged holes in the sides of the metal allowing the heat of the fire inside to radiate outward. Without pause, Sullivan gunned them down, dropping his blaster when it clicked empty and grabbing another weapon from one of the dead men. A swarm of brown shirts charged from the shadows, and Sullivan kicked one in the throat. One fired a pistol, the round scoring a bloody furrow along Sullivan's cheek. The mutie shot the Norman in the groin and shoved the wooden stock of the long blaster backward, crushing the chest of another. Then a wounded brown shirt lurched from the pile of corpses and tackled him around the legs. Furious, Sullivan kicked the man aside, and another grabbed his arm. The mutie buried his teeth into the Norm's throat and ripped out a chunk of flesh. He was released instantly. Sprinting from the tunnel, Sullivan scanned the other side of the drawbridge for an ambush, saw nothing, and charged for the distant woods. Freedom was only 100 yards of open field away. A flurry of motion in the air caught his attention, and Sullivan spun, firing upward. Unharmed by the bullets, the heavy fishing nets dropped across the bridge, pinning him in place. Dropping the blaster, the mutie grabbed the line and ripped a hole. But before he could wriggle through, more netting fell from the palisades overlooking the bridge, and then a third net, a fourth, and a fifth. Trapped under the layers, Sullivan crouched, fumbling for a weapon, when a stunning blow drove him to the wooden planks. Dazed, the mutie drew his pocket pistols and got off 2 rounds when the blasters were pounded from his grasp by a horde of sectmen wielding clubs. Roaring in wild fury, Sullivan managed to stand under the combination of nets and men, struggling to reach the edge of the drawbridge and the moat below. Already, the gills in his throat were opening for oxygen. Sullivan could breathe underwater, but the pitiful humans would drown. The brown shirts struck him from every direction, but he forged onward and reached the cobblestones edging the bridge. Searing pain lanced through his shoulder, and he saw the barbed point of an arrow sticking out of his shirt. Mentally forcing away the pain, he lurched forward again, and another arrow slammed into his boot, pinning his foot to the planks. Reaching through the netting, Sullivan grabbed a knife from a brown shirt and tried slashing his way loose, when another wave of humans swarmed over him. Pain filled his universe. He fell to the planks, never losing consciousness as he was trussed with ropes, then bound with chains. Cradling a broken arm, a Sekhman spat in Sullivan's face, and another aimed a hand cannon. A sergeant slapped the blaster away.
He's trapped now, so don't chill the bastard. We're gonna haul his ass to the docks and hang him before the whole bill. Baron Carter himself is gonna tie the rope around his stinking neck.
Cheering in victory, the joyous brown shirts lifted their captive off the bridge and hauled him back inside the bill. Masked by the nets, the mutie managed to hide a smile and calmly waited to meet the man he had been sent to kill. Mindless miles of flat swampland stretched before the companions. In hard labor, the slow hours passed, noon coming and going as they trod the sticky mud. The raft floated through the salty water, only occasionally catching on sandbars and submerged tree trunks. Rumbling storm clouds offered scant protection from the sun, and soon the swamp was steaming from the heat, sweat pouring off their bodies. Everybody stripped down as far as they dared, the bare necessities being boots and gun belts, although J.B. clung to his fedora and Mildred her medkit. Fat mosquitoes buzzed about them constantly, stealing sips of their blood until Ryan opened the fuel can and splashed some about as cologne. After that, they were left alone with the flies and the itching bites. The barge poles hadn't been found, and none of the local trees were of any use, so Doc was on the point position, testing the unseen ground ahead of them with his sword stick. A rope was tied around his waist as a precaution, and twice he dropped into sinkholes and had to be dragged back to the surface.
I have had fun before, and this is not it.
Doc stabbed the water and took another step forward.
Could be worse. Ugh.
Mildred grunted, both hands holding tight to the rope over her shoulder. The physician had removed her damp pants and tied her shirt tails in a knot between her breasts so she could take off her sports bra. Support wasn't an issue here. The temperature was. Winter in Virginia, summer in California.